Well, hello everyone.
Blog
I'm
Talk
Christine.
Radio.
I always forget that. Blog Talk Radio. Hello everyone. I'm Chris Danish, your host at Voices of Women. And I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom, which has been empowering women through an annual conference and other events we do here in Seattle every February since 1993. It's hard to believe. We're in our 27th year. We're coming up in exactly 2 weeks. We begin our conference. It's an authentic, intimate, transformative, and healing experience. We get to gather with other women and share our stories, witness each other, and transform our personal and collective consciousness. So yes, it's February 15th through the 17th, and this year's theme is Spark Our Creative Fire, Dance in Power and Beauty. And we've created a community event now. You can attend all day Saturday or all day Sunday or both days. You can experience in-depth workshops in creative arts, spirituality, body, mind, spirit, healing, movement, manifestation, and so much more. Registration fees include all our community activities and meals, including our special banquet on Saturday evening. So join us. Be witnessed, valued, and inspired. Check out the schedule at womenofwisdom.org. So also I want to point out, I haven't said it for a few shows, about the Woman of Wisdom book. It's an Amazon bestseller, an award-winning book, and it is a reflection of the conference through talks by many of our gifted authors of the Divine Feminine and art, poetry, and stories. So that's also available on our website, womenofwisdom.org. Well, today I am interviewing Reverend Judith Laxer. Judith has been with us since 1995. So she's like one of our oldest presenters. And she's given a workshop Saturday, February 16th. It's called Letting Ourselves Off the Hook, Inanna's Journey. So Reverend Judith Laxer is a modern day mystic who believes that humor, beauty, and the wonders of nature make life worth living. The founding priestess of Gaia's Temple, an exclusive earth-based ministry in Seattle, Judith also enjoys a successful private practice as a psychic, spiritual counselor, hypnotherapist, shamanic practitioner, and teacher of women's mysteries. A keynote speaker and author of Along the Wheel of Time, Sacred Stories for Nature Lovers. And that's an excellent book as well for people to check out. So Judith dedicates her work to restoring the balance between feminine and masculine energy in our culture. Her website is www.judithlaxer.com and also gaiastemple.org. Welcome, Judith.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, here we are again. I'm just counting today. I think this is our 9th interview probably because I've had my show that long. And you're at WOW every year. So, yes, we've had quite a few radio interviews together, which has always been
yes,
a lot of fun.
We're veterans now.
We're veterans. And so going to begin with your story, how you got to where you are today, including how you became a priestess of Gaia's Temple.
Wow. Well, let's see. How did I get here? I got here today. You know, that's a rather large question, and it's of course it's a long story, but I think succinctly I would say that I entered into my authentic spiritual life through a lot of psychic experiences when I was a child, and I think a lot of us, most of us, have those kind of experiences when we're still open and we haven't been taught to sort of shut down our intuition and only pay attention to the logical and linear. And And then as I got older and I realized that, you know, most people do not live their lives with this way, with this level of sensitivity to the mysteries, I kind of put it under wraps. And then when I got a little older and came to realize that this was a gift, not a curse, and that they weren't going to put me away if I kind of sort of came out of that broom closet a little bit, let myself be a little bit more of the mystic that I truly am. And so I found my sort of authentic spirituality by just kind of following what my intuition was telling me rather than what the external world dictated. And long story, very short, in 2000, I moved into this office space that I'm still in now, 19 years later. And I threw myself a big office warming party and then just decided in what I thought was a fluke, but now I look back and realize I was really being guided to offer a goddess worship service. And I decided to do that because I realized that, you know, people were gathering with spiritual community on Sundays all over. And people who followed earth-based spirituality didn't really have a place to go. And I had been telling the alternative myth to the Demeter Persephone story, the ancient Greek myth of Persephone's descent. And in circles and rituals for years and years and years, and I just decided I would develop that a little bit more and offer it as a worship service. And that was in the year 2000, and that eventually became Gaia's Temple. So I founded this ministry for the Divine Feminine in what I thought was a fluke, but I don't really think it was.
Clearly, no, it wasn't those things. Yes, they happen and they guide you, and you know that intuitive part of you picked up on something, and yes, here you are now, 19 years later almost.
September will be 19 years old. I mean, next year we're going to be 20 years old. It's kind of hard to believe. Just like you were saying earlier, you know, Women Wisdom is 27 years old. Like, wow, that's a long time to. Especially in a world that's so transient, you know, or just so, you know, what's happening in the moment and trendy, and then things sort of fade. And to have that kind of longevity really speaks to not only the commitment to organizations like this, but also to the need for them, that they have this sort of lasting quality. And also, you know, what you're saying about the, you know, intuition and really listening to that intuition, I think all of us have that, but we don't always pay attention to it. Most of us don't pay attention to it. Not everybody has the calling and wants to become a priestess and found a ministry. That's not necessarily what I mean. But we all feel, get messages and feelings that we dismiss or deny because we're living in a culture that mostly recognizes and values logical linear, not intuitive.
Yeah, so true. So it's really, well, it takes going on that inner journey to recognize those voices and know the difference, learn the difference between what's coming from outside, the external, and what the voice is really coming from inside. Because we can be misguided and go, oh, I'm hearing this, I should do this, because others are doing it, or wherever we're getting our external messages, and they really thrown off course.
Yes, that is true. And then it takes courage, too, because, you know, typically when you feel or you get the message that you're meant to do something, you're supposed to do something, and you look around you and others around you are not doing that, or the ones who are doing it so completely differently than your sensibilities are telling you, you can really question yourself and you can lose courage and lose motivation. So it does take guts.
Mm-hmm. And watching about comparing, because I can certainly compare, and I've done it, compare other conferences. You know, there's conferences down in California, but guess what? They haven't lasted. They might go a few years, and that's because Woman Wisdom is spirit-led, but you can get into such a comparison and not value what you have here.
Yeah,
and people have to remind me.
Yes. And I think everybody has something to offer. So, you know, there are different things that different ways of going about something, and some of them stick and some of them don't, you know. But
yeah,
it does take
exactly.
courage, and it takes tenacity, that's for sure.
Well, you and I both have that, I think.
I think so, too.
Well, last year you were a keynote on our Saturday banquet, which was fabulous. And
you
had a topic, I forget the total title, but something about getting off the hook. And so that was very powerful, people. And you came up with the idea of doing a workshop on that topic. So let's talk about that. What does this mean? What did it mean to get off the hook for you? To bring this topic to everybody.
Well, this is the topic of letting ourselves off the hook. Sort of came to me because of what happened for me in my own personal experience. So that was part of the keynote also. And I'm using the myth of the ancient Sumerian goddess Inanna, and the part of the myth of her descent down into the underworld where she meets her dark sister, Ereshkigal, who is insanely jealous of her and has her killed and hung on a hook from the wall in the underworld. And Inanna goes down to offer her sister some consolation when she learns that her sister's husband has died. But she comes down in all her beauty and her grandeur, or attempts to come down in her beauty and grandeur, and she is stripped of all of her worldly possessions, her fine clothing and her jewelry and her makeup, until she enters into the throne room sort of bowed low and stripped of all of her worldly goods. And her sister is consumed with jealousy because her realm is the dark underworld, where, you know, the realm of death and decay and, you know, not a light, happy place, whereas her sister Inanna gets the upper world and, you know, the beauty of the sunshine. And so she's intensely jealous. And so she has her killed and hung on the hook. So I'm using this story as a metaphor and looking at Inanna and Ereshkigal as the two different aspects of our own psyche, our sort of light and shadow side. And so we can look at the light side, not that it's necessarily good, but in this instance, the part of us that is powerful and in action and has access and choices, and then that shadow side, which has less than lovely emotions, including, you know, jealousy and deep sorrow and grief. And what happens is, until and unless we reconcile and make a healthy relationship between those two parts of our psyche, the shadow part is going to continually thwart all the good work that we do. It's going to try to stop us from being our brightest, most brilliant selves. So I think this is a very powerful myth. And I think that what we're seeing in women's culture now is a great, you know, the continual of the awakening. But recently, in recent years, with the Me Too movement, and, you know, feminism has, risen again to the next level of calling out the blatant misogyny in our culture. And we also have to take a look at how we have internalized that and how the part of us that thwarts our own progress is still active. And if we heal that part, and if we give that part room and air and understanding and compassion, we can shift how that happens and let ourselves off the hook and free ourselves. So that hook is like a metaphor of how we keep ourselves back and keep ourselves small and allow fear of, well, whatever, we can fill in the blank on what we're afraid of, but fear of, you know, being seen, of being a failing, of succeeding, I mean, it really doesn't matter. But we let our fears keep us paralyzed in a way, like Ereshkigal paralyzed Inanna on that hook. So the workshop is going to be about having women examine what goes on in their own shadow that holds them back, and how can we heal what's going on there so that we can feel true liberation and move forward in our beauty and grandeur and power and strength, especially now with what's going on in this planet. I mean, you know, you'd have to be living under a rock to see that, you know, things are not going well.
Yeah, and it's up to us to do this work. This, I mean, when you're describing this, this is difficult work. This is deep inner work.
I know
women, many women are ready for that, and some aren't. Some will be, you know,
yes,
kind of scary. But I know that you create a safe space, a safe container for this, and everybody everybody's going to be holding each other in love and light to get through this. I mean, you know, and it's hard to get to the, and I'd like you to share maybe for yourself, like, what did you dig up in that unconscious level, that shadow part of you that has shifted for you, shifted your life for you?
Yes, it did shift my life. And it happened for me actually when my dad died, and this October is going to be 10 years that happened. And what I came to realize once my father was off the planet was that the sort of tyrant that he was, who, you know, when he was a young dad, he was just riddled with anxiety. And I think, you know, I look back at that and I can see that now. But excuse me, as a young child, of course, he just was like this big, scary character in my life who had power over me, and he frightened me, and I was not only afraid of him, but I just, no matter what I did, it wasn't good enough, and, you know, many of us have had parents like that, so I'm not trying to corner the market on this, but since this is what happened for me. And then when my father died and he was no longer here, all of those demons that I felt, I guess, I had to suppress or deny or sort of put aside in order for me to stay in my family and to just feel okay about myself in the world and continue to do my work, they all came rushing to the surface. And I realized that I had internalized that strong patriarch, and who was very punitive, very punishing, so that no matter what I did, no matter how good it was, I always had this internal dialogue about, well, that wasn't very good, or you did it better yesterday, or this other person does it better, or who do you think you are? You know, all of those tapes that we play in our unconscious or our subconscious that steals our power, that pulls the plug on our power. And I realized when he died, it just all came up, and I really landed in what I think was, you know, equal to this descent of Inanna. I went to this underworld place, this dark night of the soul, for a very long time, while I learned to develop self-compassion and give myself a little wiggle room and not hold myself to such strident standards that were impossible, that nobody could meet. You know how it is, we have grace for everyone else, for all of their flaws and faults or mistakes that we make, but we are not allowed to have that, you know. That's okay for them, but not for us,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
and I just came to realize how really detrimental that was. And I'm saying it like it was easy, like, oh, I came to realize that and then went to heal it. It wasn't easy. I, you know, spent a goodly amount of time doing soulcraft practices. I saw a therapist that was really diving into what it was that was so horrible about me, you know, and came up with really, there's not very much horrible about me at all. I'm really a very nice person, you know, but I had been entrained to judge myself so harshly, and it was so painful, and I guess I had to get to that really bottom difficult place, which included a fair amount of self-loathing, until I could, I guess when I hit the bottom, have some place to push off of, you know, and just realize, no, I don't want to be living like this, and I don't want this constant war going on inside me, because I internalized the treatment that I received from my father and was just sort of unconsciously continuing to treat myself this way. And I'm an adult, and I have a choice about how I treat myself and think of myself, and, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people can relate to this, and we're not even aware we do it, like it's this unconscious part of ourselves. So,
if
something triggers it. Your father's death triggered it, and
right.
That's the journey you were meant to go on. And I've witnessed you grow and become this powerful woman and go through things, you know, and we witness each other. Because we can see the beauty in you. It's so hard for ourselves, as you said, to see it in ourselves.
We can't see it for ourselves.
No. Yep. And I think, I was thinking of when you were talking about your father and how mean he was and or how scary as a kid. And I'm thinking, for little girls, men can feel very scary. They're big, powerful, and it might be mothers for some people, but here's this looming adult over us and telling us how to be, who to be, what to do, and all this. It's scary. It's scary for a kid.
Yes.
And so you have that,
like
you said, you internalized it, you know,
because
then we go, we take all that in, that we're not good. We're not good enough.
Right. Like if I met a person who treated me the way my father treated me when I was younger, and I do want to say just in my father's defense, you know, when we got older, when my sisters and I got older, he turned into like this pussycat, which I think he actually was the whole time. But, you know, I think he was just so nervous about being a good father, and he was so under the weight of all the responsibilities that he had and his anxiety. It was just like a lethal cocktail, you know, and so he didn't really behave all that well, and he didn't treat us all that well. He took good care of us. We had, you know, roof over our house and food on the table and clothes on our back. But psychologically, it was like really rather terrorizing. But I think if I met somebody who treated me that way now, they wouldn't have this kind of power over me. But like you said, mm-hmm. when we're children, we don't have power. And also our parents are like our, or whoever the authorities are, when we're that young and impressionable, they really make an impression on us. And when we're just learning the world and how to be in the world, if the message we're getting is that whatever we do is not good enough, or, you know, we've made a mistake and we're going to be punished, you know, then we approach the world that way thereafter, unless we take the time to really examine that and make different choices. And that is hard work. It is hard.
Yes, yes. And need support. And you said you went to counselors.
Yeah.
You got help. You did the work.
Yes, and I had good friends also who could really see me and hold me in ways. Like you were talking mm-hmm. about, you know, what happens at Women of Wisdom also is that we witness each other. And, you know, the witnessing is non-judgmental. It's just being there for someone else to be in their truth and in their vulnerability and be held in a beautiful way. And God knows we don't have enough of that in this world.
Right, and it's not about fixing you. You know, when you go to someone with a problem
right.
and you're really feeling in the depths of this,
yes.
you don't want advice.
You
don't want advice. You don't want to,
yeah.
you should do this. You just want to be heard. And that's
right.
the most, listening is the most important thing. Because
right.
and in listening, I think women talk in circles, too, that we sort of talk it out. We talk through it. And if someone is just
mm-hmm.
listening, we can talk through it and get to maybe the bottom issue and go, oh, that's what was going on. And
yes.
and sometimes get reflection back from the person, but not in a fix-it way. It doesn't take
yes.
us anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the other part of this and the other angle that I'm also going to take at the conference in this workshop this year is that, you know, we can also look at what takes place between those sisters, Inanna and Areshka Gill, as what takes place between us and other women. Because when we have internalized that patriarch who is judgmental and misogynistic and has a problem with women who are, you know, strong, powerful, speaking their truth, making choices, you know, which is what is the big problem that's going on our planet right now everywhere. When we turn that on each other, you know, that is a big part of the way that the patriarchal system sort of gained power, by pitting ourselves against each other. And so our sisterhood has been really fractured. And so another way to look at this myth is that to recognize that what turns everything here, how Inanna gets off the hook, is because Areshka Gill is given compassion. And what we see often and have seen for a long time is that when one woman starts to get very powerful and her life seems to take off because she's found her truth and is speaking and living her truth, those who have not yet done that become jealous and they don't support it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a huge thing that needs to be healed in our sisterhood and among women, is that
right.
somebody else being powerful and living their truth does not diminish us. You know, it's like when one woman rises, it all helps to raise all of us. But if all we do is look at her and judge her and we're jealous of her and we, in subtle ways, if we have not examined what's going on in our, you know, subconscious, sort of sabotage her good works, then, you know, that's not only not good, but we're not going to get very far. But if we heal that sisterhood and we support each other in a true, authentic way, not just lip service, that can really change a lot of things. And so, you know, I think because the role that I have in the world, you know, as a priestess and as the founder of the ministry and, you know, all this sort of stuff, people kind of have their ways of looking at me, and they see me a certain way. And I think part of what was powerful about the keynote and about this work is that, you know, I revealed the truth of how what a difficult time I had, you know. And it's like, oh, even people who appear to, like, have it all together and are, mm-hmm. you know, doing everything that they want to be doing, you know, we all struggle with this. Every single one of us struggles with this.
Right.
And when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable in front of each other and with each other, we form strong, beautiful bonds that strengthen us. And a lot of people are afraid to show their shadow side because, you know, looking good is everything.
Yeah.
You know, it looks so good, right?
Yeah. So, well, I remember having a discussion with somebody, I think, I don't know if it was a coaching session or whatever, but I was showing my vulnerable side. And this woman went, "You, Chris Stainis, I can't believe that." And, it kind of changed the, it's like, it kind of, the hairs in my back of my, came up like, I don't know if I can work with you if you have this expectation of me to be perfect and that I haven't been vulnerable and that I haven't gone through my stuff, just like you shared that you have. I have too. Our leaders do.
Right.
And
right.
Put it up on the pedestal. And then there's the put it on the pedestal to, well, whack you down off that pedestal.
Yep.
How dare you be on the
mm-hmm.
pedestal and be above us. And now I think we're looking at everybody has their gifts and there's a place for everybody. And the people who are leaders, it's a, you know, compassionate leader. I want to talk to you about that. Compassionate leader of raises her hand out to others to lift them up, to be, you're part of me, you are with me,
right?
We do this together, and to recognize the gifts in each of us.
Right, and that doesn't necessarily mean that I have the answers for you, but if I withhold my own story or the painful things that I've gone through and the gifts I've gleaned from them, you know, in order to just look like I, you know, have everything together, that's not really authentic leadership, I don't think. You know, and mm-hmm. the idea that we have to look like we're invulnerable and nobody can get to us and we have everything together and we're perfect and we're strong and we have the answers in every situation and we always take the best behaviors, you know, I think that's also part of that patriarchal system that says that, you know, showing that we are strong and full of might and can vanquish our enemies is the only way that we can really be respected as a leader. And I just think that is a load of hooey. You know, the people that I respect in leadership are the ones who are real. They are showing their humanity, and then they're also showing that, you know, despite their upset, they're still choosing to do the right thing. Their actions are what I admire, but not because they're invulnerable, but because they are vulnerable. Like when I see someone who's gone through hardship and it hasn't embittered them, instead it's made them become even more compassionate and generous, those are the people that I really hold in the highest esteem. But those who are pretending that they have everything together and they know more than anybody else, they don't have much of my respect at all. So I try not to, you know, I try not to emulate what I don't care for in others, you know, which is like pretending that I have the answers to everything. I don't have the answers to everything. I'm another human on the planet who's, you know, very upset with what's going on right now on this planet and what's happening in the government, what's happening into our earth, you know, and that makes me vulnerable, you know. But it doesn't stop me from trying to take the best actions that I can for the highest good, you know. Anyway.
Yes, and we all need to remember that. It's like, what is the one thing I can do? What do I feel passionate about? Like, we can't fix it all. It gets overwhelming. It just gets totally overwhelming, and you think you can't do anything. But what small step can one person do? And a lot of small steps have become great things. It's just taking that first step. And there's that fear of taking that first step because will it be accepted? Will I be laughed at? Will I be looked at?
Or will it be effective? Like, is it even
that,
worth doing, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes we talk ourselves out of even the smallest little things we can do because we don't think it's going to be enough. That's also part of that. See, that's Ereshkigal in the deep part of our psyche who's stopping us all the time. Well, you're not enough. Why even bother? That's not going to do anything. You don't know what you're doing. You can't, you know, wah, 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 wah. All the negative things that come up from that deep part of our shadow. And so that stops us from even taking the very first little step. You know, doing something is better than doing nothing. But that part in our psyche will tell us that unless it's perfect, the ultimate answer, going to please everybody, then, you know, just shut up and sit down. And that's why we have to heal that, I think.
Right. So I'm curious if you would be willing to share a tip on how you approach those negative. We all have those negative voices. I mean, I don't know that we ever get over. We just have to keep seeing, recognizing them, being aware of them. I think it's the first key. But
awareness is the first step. Oh, there's that voice. You know, like I'm gonna do this, and then the voice comes in and goes, you're not gonna do that, or no one's gonna like that you do that, right? So the first step is recognizing, oh, there's that punitive voice again. It just told me no. I had this, you know, this inspiring idea that I felt was a good idea. I was kind of motivated. Hey, I'm gonna do this, and it came in like, oh no, you shouldn't do this, blah blah blah. So the first part is recognizing, whoa, wait a minute. Who was that, you know? And then when you recognize, oh, okay, that's some sort of archetype. This is very psychological. But see, this is what I love so much, where the psychological and the spiritual really meet. And this is exactly where it happens. Okay, there's a part of my psyche. There's an archetype in there who is like the Punisher. And I recognize that voice. So the first part is to recognize it. And then the next is to maybe, you know, in a meditation or a visualization or even in just your journaling, to ask it, what do you want or what do you need or why don't you think I can do this? Let's get a little bit more specific, you know. And usually what happens is when we start to hear those voices, we shut down. And we, you know, pick up the phone or go to social media or, you know, something, or we go to the refrigerator and eat something, you know, something that is soothing and distracting. But if instead you turn toward it and invite it in and ask it what it needs and ask it what it wants, you might get some answers that could be very, very helpful. Like, oh, you don't want to do that because you don't want your family to know, for instance, that you are really, you're different from everybody else in your family politically. And you don't want to talk about it, you know, you don't want to go there. And then when you really look at why is that, why don't you want to go there? Well, I don't want the fight. Why? Why don't you want the fight? Well, I don't want to be in discord with my family. Well, aren't you already in discord with your family if you can't really feel that you can be your truth? Well, yeah, I guess I am. You know, anyway, I'm just using this as a on-the-fly sort of example. But if you really start to examine exactly what is the mechanism behind that punishing, you can dismantle it. And the other thing is that that archetype in there needs something. It's doing this for a reason. And when you discover what that reason is and solve for it, they usually calm down. 9 times out of 10, I would say, or this is just in my experience, that punishing voice came in because it was afraid, because, you know, well, you know me, I'm a rather bold person, you know. It was afraid that if I got too big, too bold, that I would become a target. And it was trying to keep me safe by keeping me small.
Right.
So then in understanding that, it was like, okay, well, then what do I need to do to be maybe a little bit more careful to make sure that, you know, I'm not just tossing myself out there, that I'll be more careful about who my audience is or who I'm saying certain things in front of. You know, I don't know. I'm just going off now. But if you find what it is underneath the reason for that negative self-talk, and you solve for it. In this way, it's kind of like building another relationship, only instead of with someone out there in the world, you're changing your relationship to yourself. You're forming a healthier relationship with a different part of yourself that is scared for you and that is trying to keep you small. And it's amazing what can happen. It's not a, you know, it's not a like one and done. You probably have to do it over and over and over again. But it's worth the work because ultimately what it does is free you up. And the other thing about this is that that voice in there that is so insistent and so strong and so persistent, right, no matter what it is, it comes up to try to, when you look at those qualities of strength and persistence and insistence, you're like, wow, you know, those are really great qualities. If I could channel them to really get this work done, who knows where I could go, you know?
So true. So they say, yeah, they say like the shadow, you know, there's gifts in your shadow too.
There's gifts in the wounds, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but when they act dysfunctionally, then they're holding you back. But if you find what that gift is and can redirect it, wow, that's a beautiful thing. So anyway, that's an awful lot to try to go for in a three-hour workshop at Women of Wisdom, but I'm going to try.
Well, it'll go where it's going to go, and the people will bring what's going on for them, and they'll
and
do the journey that they can
do. And,
Yeah,
the door is open, and it's a good conversation to have, you know, between the storytelling and the dialogue and us sharing our stories about how that mechanism works. You know, we can maybe find, you know, a little bit of traction to be moving in a different direction, a little bit of ballast, you know.
Right. And I imagine even as a tip to, like, write to your shadow, write to this part of you, like you were saying, ask these questions. Sometimes writing brings another deeper level of unconscious thoughts that, you know, as you continue writing, I didn't know I thought this. And it just, you know, it helps that layer, getting to that deeper layer of self, and instead of just being on automatic pilot of how we run our life, which so many of us do, because we live in such a busy culture that we kind of get in an automatic, you know, automatic responses to everybody and life and what's going on around us, and instead of really taking the time to go to respond to the world rather than react.
Right, exactly. You know, something else I learned many, many years ago, I don't remember, I think I read this in a book somewhere, and I don't remember, so I wish I could credit who it was, but I don't remember now. But one technique was to, like, write a question on the page, like, why are you afraid to speak your truth, for example? And then with your non-dominant hand, answer. Pick up the pen in your other hand and write the answer. And you don't know what that answer is going to be until it comes out on the page, like you just said. But there's something about using your non-dominant hand that gets you out of the ego and gets you out of the place that already knows everything and allows a deeper place of you to respond. And it's really amazing what happens. First of all, it looks like a child's handwriting. And what that also shows you is that a lot of these impressions were made when we were that child.
Oh, true, yes, yes.
And that's how deep it goes, and that's how long it's been in there. I mean, I'm going to be 60 next month. That's a long time to be carrying this sort of, you know, fear of not being acceptable, right?
Yes, I know. And I think, I don't know any woman who doesn't feel that fear of being accepted. I think that's, and I also think, and because you do shamanic work too, that sometimes we're carrying things from other generations. There's stuff in our cellular, there's stuff, you know, I know when my book came out, and I was actually in a car accident in my first interview, driving home from Dr. Pat show interview of the book, and being hit by a huge truck and all these male symbols. It was just like, whoa, I didn't die.
Those
accidents where you realize you could have. And the voice was like,
that.
You're not going to die this time, you know, because way back in the, you know, centuries ago, we died for this work on the divine feminine. And that was really strong. And that was the first message. You aren't going to die this time. And so that was in me and it was holding me back. And those are unconscious things that we carry, and we don't even know where they're from. We don't even know they're there sometimes, but we don't, or we feel shame, and we don't know where it's from. And sometimes doing these shamanic journeys, because maybe you can't place it in this life, it might be from another life. You don't know. And just to play with it and kind of go, what did this come from? And like you said, talk to it. Yeah, it's great. Well, this is going to be a very good workshop. I encourage people to sign up for it. Judith's workshops are always well attended and loved by everybody. I said she's been around since 1995, so
Thank you.
That
says
something.
Thank you.
So, yes. So check out her workshop, Letting Ourselves Off the Hook, Inanna's Journey. It is Saturday, February 16th. So you can register just for Saturday and go to the banquet. You'll have lunch. We have some interactive activities. We have Interplay. We have Vicki Dodd is doing sound nutrition. She's a fabulous sound healer. And then the banquet, we've got Naomi Wachira, who's a fabulous Afro folk singer from Kenya, and also a speaker, Sikone Nemanya from Burundi. So it's going to be a powerful day. And just go to womanofwisdom.org to find out all the different selections, many, many different kinds of workshops. If you like art, there's creative arts ones. And then there's these ones like Judith of diving into this shadow journey of yourself and so much more. So check it all out. And thank you so much today for being on the show today, Judith.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Yep. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay. See you then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.